Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
Hey, everybody, it's David Nagel, and welcome to the Successful Mind Podcast. Today, I'm going to be taking you through, well, not just today, but for the next few podcasts, I'm going to be taking you through Jordan Peterson's book, 12 Rules for Life, An Antidote to Chaos. I have gone through this book several times. Now, let me just give you a little heads up on this. It's not a book that you just read and put it down. This book is a study. Like, if you're going to really gain the wisdom that Peterson brings to this book, you've got to study it. And it's always my recommendation that when an author is referencing particular literary pieces that they're pulling information from within the context of their teaching or their writing, that you go back and at least read some of what they're talking about so that you could get an understanding. Now, I know that's not for everybody. It happens to be one of the things that I enjoy very much. I just love gaining the wisdom out of this stuff. So having said that, as I was going through the book looking at how do I do some justice to what Peterson has done here, because it is a magnificent piece of work that he's put together. But I figured that I would do, instead of taking all of the concepts that he's using per chapter out and trying to go through each one, which I don't think we would ever get done doing the podcast if I actually did that, I decided to take just a couple or one out of each chapter that just happened to stand out to me based on some of the things that I'm currently talking about. This gives you a little bit of Peterson's flair and viewpoint on it, and hopefully it interests you in his work, and we could help him in a way, maybe sell more books or go to his lectures or whatever, because I very much enjoy what he's doing, and maybe one day we'll be able to get him on the podcast. Okay, so he says something here. I'm just going to jump into this, and then I'm going to start explaining as I go, so you have an idea of what we're talking about here. He says, when the awakening occurs, so he's talking about when a person begins to wake up to life, when they start to realize that life is not just happening to them, but they're actually interacting with life in a way where the choices that they make are actually making a difference in the results that they get or with the other people that they're interacting with. So he says, when the awakening occurs, when once naive people recognize in themselves the seeds of evil and monstrosity and see themselves as dangerous, at least potentially, their fear decreases. They develop more self-respect. Then perhaps they begin to resist oppression. Now, Peterson talks a lot about people becoming acutely aware of the dangerous side of themselves, the dark side of themselves. And I haven't heard a lot of people, especially modern day people, really talk about this much. I think that probably one of the most useful references that I could bring into this would be the people that are teach from a fire and brimstone place inside the Old Testament, or using the Old Testament for that type of a teaching. But Peterson's different here. He's very, very different in what he's talking about. He's talking about people really becoming awake to their full potential. And that means that it's not just looking at the good side of ourselves, but understanding also the evil or the dark side of ourselves. And he explains in certain places the foolishness of a person to basically go through life only looking at themselves as a good person. And here's the reason why, because especially today with how much positive thinking and spirituality and all of that that's out there, it's almost like people don't want to delve into this other side of their personality, that it's like we all know it exists, but we never really contemplate or fathom the depth or the power of it to the extent that Peterson talks about. And I think that what's important about that is that we really cannot grasp the totality of the power that we have. And totality is a big word, because I don't know that we ever will understand the full potential that we have as human beings. I think the door is starting to get cracked open on the idea that we really do have this amazing potential. It's been written about for a long time, but in the last 100 years is a real solid representation of what we can do when we really focus thought in on a direction. It's also interesting that it's been in the last 100 years that we have had both the extreme abilities to, one, completely annihilate every living thing on the planet based on technology, and also to do really great things on the planet that we probably should be doing a lot more of, but that we actually have the ability to do. And Peterson also talks about this place where, like, it's absolutely amazing that we're actually functioning at the level of life that we've created, 7 billion people, and for the most part, the infrastructure of the world doesn't just drop off. Like, we trust that the lights are going to go on every day, and our computers are going to work, and that the toilets are going to flush, and that we actually have indoor plumbing, because these are very recent things in the lives of human beings. And so is the consciousness that we're becoming aware of inside of ourselves, which is allowing more people to be able to step into their potential. So I think that's why he goes to a lot of the extremes, I think, because it's interesting, because when I first started studying, and a lot of the study that I've done over the years has been studying the extreme dark in some people and the extreme good, and it really helps you make a lot more sense out of the middle, because the middle's where it can get really fuzzy. But when you understand the extremes and you see the patterns and the potentials in both of those sides, then the middle becomes a little bit easier to understand. He says, they see that they have the ability to withstand because they are terrible too. They see that they can and must stand up because they begin to understand how genuinely monstrous they will become otherwise, feeding on their resentment, transforming it into the most destructive wishes. To say it again, there is very little difference between the capacity for mayhem and destruction integrated and the strength of character. This is one of the most difficult lessons of life. I think that the idea here is to really consider why we do the good things that we do. Why do we want to be productive? Why do we get up in the morning and go to work or go to school or work on our marriages or our families or come up with new ideas? One of the reasons that we do this is so that we don't fall into the abyss of the darkness that lies within people. But we also see currently, I don't have all the historical data on this, but there's a lot of people that suffer from being stuck in the dark in their life, and they get stuck in the resentments. And we've seen what that looks like for individuals when they get stuck in that place, how destructive it can be, not just to themselves, but to a lot of people around them. It really is pretty terrifying with some of the atrocities that we're currently experiencing. And also, if you start to look historically at the atrocities that have been that man has done to man, like the things that we have done to each other can be really horrific. And the more we move through society, I think we're in a struggle to stay in the good side, the productive side of ourselves, and to keep moving forward. Yet we have an enormous challenge. And part of that challenge is that we also have life, technology, the demand of what the world needs from human beings in order to keep moving forward, and then our ability to keep up with that, our ability to adjust to it, to adapt to it, so to speak, so that we're productive members of society. But then you also have to consider the psychological strain that that puts on the individual. So if you have an individual who is struggling psychologically, struggling spiritually, struggling morally, struggling with their own self-identity, the potential for catastrophe within that person begins to increase at an exponential rate. So the more we understand, the more we arm ourselves with the power to make different choices in life, which is one of the places that I'm going to be going here. So he also makes this mention, I think is fascinating. The next sentence after what I read was, he says, maybe you're a loser and maybe you're not. But if you are, you don't have to continue in that mode. So there's the idea of the choice, right? But here's the thing. What if you don't know? Like really, seriously, think about this. What if you don't know if you're a loser? How do we know that we're not productive, that we're not a winner, so to speak, right? Well, I think that it comes from recognizing our own suffering. Like there's something inside the human being that in a healthy human being, that it's like a self-regulating principle that says we can do better. But when we're not doing better, in order to make the decision and the changes necessary to do better can be quite a lift. It could be quite a feat of getting ourselves going, making a decision to do something else. We get stuck in a lot of improper thinking that really goes to very chaotic conclusions. And in those chaotic conclusions, we can't seem to make sense out of picking a direction at all. And I remember being stuck in this place in my life. I remember looking out at my life, looking at the decisions that I had and had not made that caused me to be in a bad space, and then thinking to myself, how the hell do I get out of here? Because everything that I currently know kind of indicates that I'm going to be stuck here forever. And on top of that, which was even worse, was that there were people in my life that were also kind of confirming that my destiny was really to just drive that forklift. So it's a really fascinating thing because I started to recognize that something was very, very wrong. And what's more important about it was that at some point in time, well, I know the exact point in time, but the idea is that at some point in time, I became very aware that I was the problem. And I think that's where it has to start for a person in order to start to order their life rightly, right? They have to realize that they're part of the problem. So let's see where else he goes here. He says, standing up straight with your shoulders back, which is the title of the first chapter of his book, is not something that is only physical because we're not only a body. You're a spirit, so to speak, a psyche as well. Standing up physically also implies and invokes and demands standing up metaphysically. Standing up means voluntarily accepting the burden of being. Your nervous system responds in an entirely different manner from when you face the demands of life voluntarily. Now, I love that. I think that's very well constructed, written, and to the point. And it makes a very important point that, I remember people would say, like, where do you get all the energy to do what you do? How do you stay excited? How do you stay motivated? And Emerson said, do the thing and you'll get the energy to do the thing. And a lot of people don't understand that because they don't ever actually go out there and do the thing. So what Peterson is saying here, and he is a clinical psychologist and a professor, and he's very well read, and he brings a lot of data to the table when he teaches, is that our nervous system actually responds differently when we do something voluntarily. When we have that side of our choice engaged in what we're doing, our body responds differently than if it's something that we have to do or something that we're refusing to do. He says, you respond to a challenge instead of bracing for a catastrophe. So we are looking at this point, when we start to wake up, we're looking at the world differently. Our perception is changing. And we see the challenge as something that's going to help us grow and get where we want to go, instead of seeing just the doom and the gloom in the challenge or the negative consequence that could happen if, say, something went wrong. He says, you see the gold, the dragon hordes, instead of shrinking in terror from the all-too-real fact of the dragon. You step forward to take your place in the dominance hierarchy and occupy your territory, manifesting your willingness to defend, expand, and transform it. That can all occur practically or symbolically as a physical or a conceptual restructuring. So, again, there's part of what we're doing where the fear begins to drop away and we see the challenge is just the challenge, and we're not seeing it as, well, he talks about the dragon here, which is mythological. It's in so many stories around the world. It's very interesting. But the interesting thing about the dragon in the way that Peterson's using it here is that we no longer see the challenge that the dragon is presenting for us as something that is necessarily being done to us. So it's almost like in our willingness to accept the challenge, we already begin to gain dominance and slay the dragon simultaneously as we're moving toward the thing that we want. He says, to stand up straight with your shoulders back is to accept the terrible responsibility of life with your eyes wide open. It means deciding to voluntarily transform the chaos of potential into the realities of habitable order. It means adopting the burden of self-consciousness, vulnerability, and accepting the end of the unconscious paradise of childhood, where finitude and morality are only dimly comprehended. It means willingly undertaking the sacrifices necessary to generate a productive and meaningful reality. It means acting to please God in the ancient language. So that's really interesting. The we're dropping the innocence of childhood, and we're seeing life for the seriousness that it entails, and we're responding to it from a place of self-introspection, asking really good but very hard questions about where we're going to go in life, and then standing up to the principles that we're going to lay down for ourselves in life and how we're actually going to show up to it. So I think this is the reason why he titled the chapter Standing Up With Your Shoulders Back, as a way of, this is how I'm going to show up in the world. This is how I'm going to present myself to the world. And I'm going to do it with courage, and I'm going to do it with responsibility. And then he brings in this last sentence here, and he says it means acting to please God in the ancient language. So what I think that he's referencing there is the idea of God, or whatever your belief in God is, as a pinnacle or a higher moral standard or potential for our life than maybe the people around us, maybe than what we were raised with, maybe than what we see other people doing. And if we grab something that's higher for ourselves and we focus in on that thing that's higher, we can make great changes in our life and, of course, great productivity also. Now, in order to do this, I'm going to move over to chapter 2 of his book, which is Treat Yourself Like Someone You're Responsible for Helping. It's very interesting, this chapter, because he talks about, he has a story in this chapter, and he states something that I knew was accurate, but I never really considered the implication of it. But it's a pretty interesting reality, especially as a metaphor for a way a person is actually treating themselves. He talks about how there's a lot of people that will go to a doctor. They have some kind of a problem. The doctor will give them a prescription. It's doc. Now this part is documented, so you have to go through the book to actually get the total statistics on this, because I'm not going to get into that, because it's not that important for what I'm going to do. But there's a certain percentage that won't fill the prescription, right? So they go to the doctor, they have a problem, and there's a certain percentage that won't fill the prescription. Then, out of the percentage that does fill the prescription, there's only a certain percentage that'll actually take the pills on time. And out of that, there's only a certain percentage that'll actually finish taking the prescription. And there's an enormous percentage of people that won't take it on time, won't finish the prescriptions, and sometimes never actually even fill it. So then he says, but the interesting thing about this same group of individuals is if they have a dog and the dog gets sick, they will take the dog to the vet. The vet will give the dog a prescription. They'll get it filled at the pharmacy, and they will give the dog the prescription, and they will give the dog the prescription on time, and they will give the dog the prescription in its entirety. And yet these are the same people that won't do the same thing for themselves. So they'll treat their pet better than they'll actually treat themselves. I have witnessed this many times in the work that I have done with individuals, where they will do all kinds, all manner of helping other people get their lives right, get their lives in order, fix problems that they're having, be there to comfort them, give them advice and good advice. And yet when it comes to their own life, they it's almost like they cannot get themselves to do the behaviors based on the results that they even say that they want. So it's always fascinating, like, why is that? Why do we have this? So one of the things that we need to understand is, how can we get ourselves to a place where we're actually making conscious choices and decisions that are actually productive? Because everybody makes choices and decisions every day, but they're not always productive. In order to do that, I'm going to reference some of the material here. So he says, we internally inhabit order surrounded by chaos. Now, that's a very interesting statement. And the reason that it's interesting is that it is so very true that if we just stop for a moment and we look at our world and everything that's going on, even the earth spinning in the universe, there is a tremendous amount of chaos around and in everything that is going on. But within that chaos, there is an order that makes everything work. And very often, when we are looking to do something in our life, if we cannot remove the chaos from our thinking, it becomes very difficult for us to bring any kind of order to our thought process in order to make a decision. So he goes on. He says here, We eternally occupy known territory surrounded by the unknown. We experience meaningful engagement when we meditate appropriately between them. We're adapted in the deepest Darwinian sense, not to the world of objects, but to the meta-realities of order and chaos, yin and yang. Chaos and order make up the eternal transcendent environment of the living. So if we also look at the law of perpetual transmutation of energy, one of the things that we see is that our brain, we can look at this from two aspects, actually. We can look at it from the physical aspect of our being, and we can look at it from the intellectual aspect of our being. The physical aspect of our being, we have energy that flows to and through us on a continuous basis. Our DNA determines what that energy turns into. So that is our bones, our skin, our fingernails, our hair, our teeth, muscles, you know, everything that our body is made up of. The energy that makes all of that up is the same energy that makes up a tree or water or a tomato, right? The DNA within everything determines what that thing is actually going to be. So in our mind, we have the ability to think consciously. And because we have the ability to think consciously, we can bring order if we think, if we learn how to think, because thinking is actually a skill. If we really learn how to think, we can bring order to the chaos around us and we can create things. Now, if you look at all the things that have ever been created by human beings, all of that was in a state of, I would call it knowledgeable chaos, because the knowledge is omnipresent in the universe and it's kind of like just floating around out there in the ether. And as we start to follow the desires of our own human potential, we start to use our imagination. And our imagination is used in a way where it starts to bring order into, or order out of chaos. And then as we speak, we give it more order. Or as we write, we give it more order. He has some interesting examples here. He says, to straddle the fundamental duality is to be balanced, to have one foot firmly planted in order and security and the other in chaos, possibility, growth, and adventure. When life suddenly reveals itself as intense, gripping, and meaningful, when time passes and you're so engrossed in what you're doing that you don't notice, it is there and then that you are located precisely on the border between order and chaos. And when you're there, it's like it is flowing through you naturally. So you're getting the best of both worlds. Chaos does not necessarily mean destructive. It just means out of order. And I know that a lot of people, like when you hear it, you may think to yourself, oh, I want to live in a chaotic life and I want to live in a chaotic family or a chaotic business or whatever. yeah, that's definitely a form of chaos. But very often the chaos that we experience in our life is only because we're not bringing order to it. It's a representation of what's actually going on in the mind. So the more order we bring to our thought, the more order we bring to our life. He says, chaos and order are fundamental elements because every lived situation, even every conceivable lived situation, is made up of both, no matter where we are. There are some things that we can identify, make use of, and predict, and some things we neither know nor understand. So what do we do with that information? Well, here's what I think we do with that information. I think that first and foremost, it should cause us to study more and understand more about ourselves and the potential that we have and of where it is that we're going. But we also have to understand that until we make a decision, we don't bring any order. So when we have a problem, one of the things that we're experiencing is the chaos of that problem, because the problem could have a large number of different effects that happen because of the problem. And if we don't handle the problem, how we handle the problem, if we handle the problem incorrectly, if we handle the problem correctly, who's involved in the problem, there could be a lot of different parts that go with the problem that make it very chaotic. The more we begin to think about the actual outcome that we want based on any situation that we're in, we begin to bring order to that chaos. And as we bring order to it, we can then build and see the steps that are necessary for us to make a decision to actually put our lives in order correctly, or solve a problem, or earn the money that we want, or write a book, or have a great relationship. But in order to do that, we have to bring order to a chaotic way of thinking and a chaotic way of living. There's all the potential is in the chaos, but it's only potential until we make a decision to bring order to it. All right, we're just getting started. Stick with me because it's going to be a great adventure through this book. Thank you very much.
Listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.